My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Audio.
So yeah. Jeff Bezos, founder of Amazon, he's apparently looking to find an NFL team and purchase it. And I've see all these people that are super excited about Jeff Bezos potentially buying their team. And I wonder how it's actually going to work out with Bezos buying an NFL team, because he's notorious for just berating his employees, talking down to them, just ripping apart, tearing them apart, hyper-efficiency. And some of those things would be good for the business side of the NFL. But I get a feeling that I see like a Dan Snyder type collision it's coming potentially.
Completely. He does not strike me as someone who is hands-off and real self-aware about where his expertise lies. Like, that's not the impression I get.
Because what he does is he takes his philosophies and his theories on making things efficient, and he applies it to everything, right?
Oh, yeah.
And the NFL and professional sports in general is replete with billionaires who think, hey, I'm good at business stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to apply all of that to this sports stuff, and everybody will succumb to my will.
Guys, I built this empire out of my garage with a mere $300,000 loan.
Yeah.
And only I could have pulled that off.
Right,
so I can definitely turn this franchise around. Watch.
But the one thing with Amazon that is different than other industries, because all these other industries, you can amass great fortune, but you're not necessarily facing the same level of competition on a week in, week out basis, a year in, year out. And there's no level playing field. Like, once you gain an advantage in business, I mean, there's a regulation and all that, but to a certain point,
all that regulation.
Up until you get to the point of being a monopoly, it's not necessarily a level playing field.
No, they don't start at the end of 2020 and then go, all right, guys, 2021. Now we're all back on a level playing field. Nobody's Let's start over again and see how Amazon does this year.
Hey, Amazon, hey, great job, but here's the thing. We're going to take a bunch of your earnings and give them to Nook.
Exactly, right.
So I know this Kindle thing has worked out groovy for you, but we feel like Nook really needs a push in the right direction. So they're going to get all the best titles, okay?
Right.
Yeah. There's no Nook in the NFL.
Yeah. All right, eBay, it's your time to shine. Yeah.
I think there are some things, and I just found out about this like 7 minutes ago, so I brainstormed real quickly before I called you, what Bezos does really well at the NFL with love that the other NFL owners would love, especially not paying taxes, because for the NFL forever was a nonprofit entity, which was made to be a bigger deal than it actually was.
Agreed.
Because people acted like the teams themselves didn't pay taxes.
Yeah.
They did. It was just at the end, the NFL was like a clearinghouse, right? The NFL was a clearinghouse and everything got pushed out to the owners.
Right.
And then the owners would pay their taxes. But it was enough of a PR hit that after a while they just said, all right, this is too big of a pain in the ass. We'll go ahead and call ourselves a for-profit company. But the NFL itself still doesn't actually make all that much money. The teams do. The teams make boatloads of money.
Yeah.
So, but
I've heard that.
But But I do think that they also get a lot of tax breaks, especially locally. Yeah. And they create deals. So Bezos
well, and you also have,
with that.
You have plenty of support just from the municipalities and the local taxpayers.
Yeah.
I mean, they're helping subsidize the building of stadiums. I mean,
right,
it's like,
right.
You know, that's so not that's a lot all, of businesses can do that.
He's already accustomed to that. And
yeah, absolutely. You know,
people yeah. just clamoring to get an Amazon warehouse built.
And he's a big personality. I mean, if there's one thing that the NFL seems to not be opposed to, it's big personality to owners.
I wonder if he, who would he talk to? What level of underling would he dress down when it comes to the NFL? Because he's notorious for just ripping people apart, apparently. I guess because he comes up, this is all just stuff I'm reading about. I'm not, I haven't read like a Jeff Bezos biography or anything. But yeah. would he actually be, because Dan Snyder's got some pretty doozy stories of just him coming in and not understanding who he can and can't boss around. I mean, technically he can boss everybody around, but after a certain time, people just don't want to work for him.
Right.
So do you think would he actually like rip apart a head coach in front of the players?
I think that's interesting because you know this. I mean, there's like sort of the two different kinds of like corporate megalomaniacs or personalities. There's the guys who, because they never got to be athletes or anything else, they still put those personalities on a pedestal.
Yeah.
So they feel like weirdly in both intimidated and really impressed by those guys. So they really just kind of ultimately want to be friends, and they don't want to pick on them. They don't want to. They want no friction.
They're jock sniffers. Like that's what. Yes. No, that's what Dan Snyder is. He's a jock sniffer.
Right.
I mean, that's why he gave Deion Sanders the dumbest contract in the history of football.
Yeah, up until Haynesworth.
But at least like with Deion, he gave him this contract that Deion could walk away from without having to pay back any of his prorated signing bonus at all, which is that's something you do sometimes with, you know, like the Lions didn't make Calvin Johnson pay back any of his prorated signing bonus because he's a legend. Deion came in carpetbagging and was gone and he didn't have to pay anything because Dan Snyder is the ultimate jock sniffer.
And he's beyond his prime.
Yeah. I could see Bezos not being impressed by anybody. I would say
same.
I think he sees ones and zeros.
Agreed.
I think he's coming in and he's just like trying to figure out which algorithm. That part of it would be interesting. I bet he would take analytics to the max and he would end up like being the most analytical organization.
Is that his rap? Is he known for being a big analytics guy?
Because
that would be interesting.
I mean, they use algorithms out the wazoo, right? Just to try to make everything as efficient as possible and figure out, you know, drive business to different products and all that stuff. I don't know. I guess Spencer Jones is, I don't know what he's into or what kind of algorithm he's into. Spencer Jones, as many people listening now have probably seen the video of Spencer Jones and his buddy. Is his buddy a football player too at Oklahoma University?
It reeked of like that, or just like generic entourage guy who also was up for debauchery.
Yeah. So Spencer Jones, if nobody's seen it yet, just go search the Spencer Jones video. But Spencer Jones and his buddy are talking a little bit of smack to about a couple of guys that you find out eventually are, I think they're wrestlers. But they also have MMA training. They've got cauliflower ear. That's all you need to know. And the one kid with cauliflower ear turns to his buddy and says, "Which one do you want?" Because he's talking to Spencer Jones and his buddy who were talking smack to him. And you can tell Spencer Jones and his buddy think that this is about to go their way. Like they think that they're about to just, you know, tell these guys what's up. And meanwhile, the little guy has a bloody nose already. And then the little guy all of a sudden just gives a little tap to Spencer Jones' face and then throws a combo to him, gets down, starts trying to give him the sleeper hold. It got ugly real fast. Spencer Jones had to have a 4-hour-long surgery to reconstruct his orbital bone, almost lost his eyeball, which is tough for a wide receiver. I don't think you can go Rocky as a wide receiver. I don't think being blind in one eye is as easy as it was for Rocky to become a head.
No, I feel like a downgrade to your depth perception probably isn't ideal at receiver. Seems like it'd be a big detriment.
This is a lot of people have noticed this, that, hey, you got to be smart enough, especially if you go to school at Oklahoma, to see the cauliflower ear. Because Oklahoma's got a very good wrestling program. I think most kids in that area of the country know that, all right, wrestlers, you might as well tack on 30 to 40 pounds to their bar fighting weight class.
Right.
Like they're not going to, they're going to, especially in a bar fight, because they're going to get leverage on their side. It's not going to turn, you're not going to be sitting there, you know, putting up your dukes and circling the square and all that.
No,
stuff.
You're not trading like blows to the face repeatedly, like in the movies. And it just also feels like OU might just be like white guy hardo headquarters.
Yeah.
Like I could just see 100% that it's just like 75% of the male student body just like grew up wrestling bales of hay and just dreams about getting in bar fights.
This is where Spencer Jones looks especially rough, is because he's got some super, super white sneakers on, which is nice. I mean, good for you. But you're in a bathroom and not only is he taller and bigger than the kid that kicked his ass, but the kid that kicked his ass is wearing cowboy boots, which on that concrete floor in a slick bathroom in a bar.
Slick.
But you know, he didn't have any traction on that at all.
No, that's not ideal. Bad footwear choice.
Yeah. So Spencer Jones definitely outweighed that kid. And he also had a better footwear choice for boxing or for fighting. And he got done in. And then his buddy, too, got body slammed. It was a dirty. I'm watching this thing, and I'm usually when I watch fights, I cringe a little bit. Like when the one guy gets body slammed into the corner, figure, okay, that's some serious skull damage right there. But I couldn't stop thinking about just all the urinals and the pee on the floor and disgusting. All that stuff. That was a really like you got to be pretty drunk to. Oh no. Well, I guess you got to be pretty angry.
Well, yeah. Never mind. During COVID, too, and you're rolling around on the ground. I mean, there's, you know, it's not ideal. You're just
didn't look like anybody in that bathroom was all that concerned.
No one in there was overly concerned about the pandemic. No,
you could tell it was pretty late in the night too, because all the guys at the urinal had to piss bad enough that they kept peeing.
Yes,
like as there was a melee going on behind them, we're like, all right, that's great, but I got to piss, and I probably waited, I don't know, like 10 minutes to get into this bathroom. I'm only gonna
film this for another 5 seconds and then pee, and then I'm gonna leave.
I also noticed too, a lot of people saying, and this is true because I grew up with my brother was an All-American wrestler, so I know about wrestlers and how tough they are. I watched my brother kind of diffuse a lot of situations where football player friends of mine would want to fight my brother, and my brother would just double leg take down him until they got tired. Like he would just keep messing with him until they got tired and they had to kind of laugh it off. So smaller guys, if they've got wrestling or MMA experience, are definitely, you don't trifle with them. But to any smaller guys who have wrestling experience who are listening to this, always remember that there are also bigger guys who have wrestling experience too. So like just because a guy looks like a football player, remember, that could be Brock Lesnar. You know, that could be the next one of these guys that, who was a, there was an offensive lineman that was a national champion, Carlton Hasselrig.
Yeah.
He never played football in college. He was a national champion wrestler, never played football in college, and just got signed on to the Steelers, was it? Yeah. So just always be careful. What was your worst, because this is pretty embarrassing for Spencer Jones. What was your worst fight experience ever?
I think most football players, I mean, obviously most, because otherwise you would just see it on the news, you know, every day, but do their best to avoid that kind of situation. So I didn't get into a ton of fights.
You get really good at walking away from stuff.
You get good at walking away because there's, I think what people don't realize is, you know, the perception from like your male peers is always like, man, if I were as big as you, no one would ever mess with me. And it's, I don't know that I'm going to say it's the opposite, but you get tons of guys who like, you just become this weird target for like alpha angst. And so they're picking you out in a crowd. And I was in college my senior year.
There's one guy in a crowd. Like, there's just one weirdo in a bar that's going to like try to elbow you at the bar.
Yeah. And that's all it takes.
Show a girl how tough he is.
That's all it takes. Right. Yeah. And so, you know, and I had broke my foot in training camp going into my senior year. So I was on crutches. I was the designated driver, and we were at a bar, college bar at ASU in Tempe. And all my teammates were there, everybody had been drinking, and it was just like the typical hardo guy was starting something with one of my teammates. And I literally just, I barely postured. I'm on crutches. It had been a couple of weeks, and I barely moved as though I was, what was I going to do? I mean, I was on crutches. Yeah. As big and strong as I was. I mean, you can't do much when you're on one leg. And before I knew what happened, someone had bashed a beer bottle over the back of my head.
No.
Yeah, smashed the bottle over my head. And so I went down. And I was on the ground, and the guy, it was a serious situation. The guy picked up the beer bottle, the back end of it, and he went to stab me.
No shit.
I threw my elbow up and I caught the beer bottle with my elbow. And as this is all happening, I mean, typical situation where the adrenaline is rushing.
Yeah.
You don't know what's going on. You think like blood was pouring out because it would. Yeah.
Did it even hurt your elbow when you stopped the beer?
I mean, it did.
You could tell in the moment.
Yeah.
But in the moment, could you tell that it hurt?
No, that's what I was going to say. In the moment, you usually, I mean, blood is flowing, but you think nothing's going on. I mean, you think you're completely fine because the adrenaline is helping. You know, and they were kicking me, and then they ran out of the bar, and I popped up, and I mean, Seth, this was the most enraged in my entire life I had ever been. It was one of those moments where when you're watching like Dateline and they talk about how they're like talking to the guy who's decades later still locked up, and he goes, yeah, I just flew into a rage. I didn't even know what happened. And before I knew it, there were just pieces of body around me. That was the feeling that I had in that moment. Like if I had my hands on that guy, I would have just literally torn him limb from limb. And I popped up and I was on one foot, just gushing blood. And I hop out of the bar chasing after these guys, sadly, an enraged, bloody mess, just like a heathen on one leg. Oh. And I'm like, obviously not going to catch the guy. And they're purposely walking just fast enough to where there's no way I can catch him. Right. Just like adding insult to injury.
Like race walking.
Yes. They're literally like backward doing like that, like never 2 feet off the ground at the same time. You know, like backing up and pure, the most prolific example of instant karma that's ever happened. They're backing up and they don't see that our starting corner is coming out of a bar right behind them. Mm-hmm. And so he's coming out of the bar and he sees me and he goes, Drew, what happened? And I go, kill those guys. And that's the only thing I say. I just go, kill those guys. And this was the kind of personality that you're talking about that you don't know that you're going to bump into. When you think about maybe you're going to get in a fight that night, is this guy who was on my team.
Your cornerback.
This is not.
Probably like 190 pounds of.
Yes. Yes. 190 pounds of just rivet steel.
Yeah.
And he was just.
And knows what he's doing.
And also, what kind of person, by the way, just takes a one sentence order to punch a stranger and has no qualms about it whatsoever. I go kill that guy and he goes, absolutely. And he just goes, and I watched it. It was like out of a movie. He goes 1, 2, 3 and drops all three of them just one at a time. And he's like, hey, come get your shots in. And in that moment, as mad as I was like, I think I'm good. I am all set because you may have killed one of those guys.
It's like one of the manliest things you'd ever seen in your
life. I was just kind of like, I'm never going to get in a fight with you.
Yeah.
Because lesson learned in that case. But he ended up knocking one of the guy's eyes out completely.
Oh my gosh.
Blind to the guy. Yeah, the guy lost his eye.
Some of these kids, man, don't understand.
No, the damage.
They really, because they watch movies. Yeah.
Yep.
And they think like they envision themselves getting in fights.
Yeah.
You don't get it. Even I've slap boxed with guys that grew up knowing how to fight. Mm-hmm. Like knowing exactly. Look, if I get into a fight, I'm turning it into a wrestling match.
Of course. Yeah.
But like just slap boxing with guys that know what they're doing. You don't know.
It doesn't take much. It doesn't take much. And that's the other part where you realize when you're a bigger guy with that kind of power.
Yeah.
That if you're mad and you're at all out of control, just that is a dangerous situation.
Well, yeah, I had a friend in college who was a bigger dude. I won't say his name because he's actually a very respectable business person now. But
Alec Baldwin.
And that happened at Cornell a lot because you know you got a lot of it's not like the roughest place on earth. So not a lot of street smarts.
Those tough Ivy League kids, yeah.
So, but this kid grew up in a rough part of Connecticut, like, and which just sounds funny, but there are actually, you know, there's like some pretty, he grew up in a tough part of New Haven. Ironically, that's where Yale is, but like New Haven's not a great town.
Yeah.
And he beat up three kids one night who jumped him, and he ended up getting put on, like, suspended from school for a semester. And put on probation for like a year because he almost murdered these kids. He just, so three guys jumped him. He, you know, knocked two of them out and maimed another one with like three punches.
Yeah.
And, you know, they told the story that he attacked them and he was out, and he might've had some priors from high school. But
he's like, you don't get it. Yeah. I'm being punished for just being a natural.
And now that I'm thinking about it. Yeah. I only heard his side of the story. And,
now in the moment that I'm revisiting this,
but it was him versus three guys. And, I had another friend though, too. Jimmy, who's a big tight end, really like the like the gentlest kid that ever lived, really good tight end, but he grew up in Rockland County, you know, just close to New York City. And he was standing in a pizza shop with his friend, with his girlfriend one night. And this guy behind him just would not shut up, like talking smack to him. And like one of these guys that you're talking about. And he started, and then he started making fun of Jimmy's girlfriend, just calling her a whore and all this stuff. And right. Jim's like the most laid back guy on earth. And he was like, so I guess, I don't know. Do you want to go outside?
I have to fight you.
I guess we got to go outside. He said, yeah, I'm going to go kick your ass outside. So Jimmy went outside and put him in the hospital. And the kid, this was verified. Like this, there were witnesses to this.
Right.
But, you know, technically it's, you know, Jim didn't have to fight him. It wasn't self-defense and what have you. But like it just loaded, like that school is loaded with kids that just didn't know. They just didn't know what they were getting into and when they were, because they'd never been punched. There's just kids that have never been punched when they go too far.
Yeah, like exactly.
This kid that was talking smack to Cam Newton. He may have been punched at some point in his life, but he's
not hard enough. Not hard enough.
Yeah. The kid was talking smack to Cam Newton, and Cam came back and was trying to talk to him. And people are enraged at this child who was talking smack to Cam Newton. I'm trying to think, like, I swear I've been to at least a few summer camps where there's at least one or two obnoxious kids that won't shut up like that. I don't know if it just usually doesn't get caught on film, and it's not Cam Newton, but there's still. You know, but there's always one kid at a summer camp that won't keep his mouth shut about like how good he is, right? And he's gonna kick your ass someday.
Oh, always. Yeah. It's usually the guys, it's the big fish in the small pond scenario, you know, where they've never actually gone against someone who either had the same talent or the physical ability.
That kid might actually be pretty good though. I want to find out about what if all of a sudden, you know, 7-8 years from now, he's in the NFL, he's going to be known as that kid that talks smack to, and then you know what it's going to be? It's going to be a funny and endearing story. Remember?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They'll spin it that. Yeah.
Cam took him under his wing. Cause he was impressed with his moxie.
His moxie.
My brother did that at a wrestling camp once. This is turning into the Dan Payne podcast. We were at a wrestling camp. He wrestled at Clarion, which is one of these schools in Pennsylvania that's Division II for everything except wrestling. It's Division I for wrestling because wrestling's so big in Pennsylvania. So it's like Clarion, Bloomsburg, Lock Haven, all these schools.
But was he a heavyweight?
He started off, he wrestled 155 his freshman year, I think, or 167. And by his senior year, he just couldn't cut weight anymore because he'd grown. He's a late bloomer like me.
Sure.
So he ended up going from 177 up to heavyweight because there was no 220. There's no 220 at the time. So he was like wrestling 275-pound dudes.
That could be good for him, though. He's probably a specialist. He's a technician, and he knows how to handle doughy guys at that age.
It was good for most of them until you got to the really good guys he just wasn't. He was strong enough. Yeah, and they knew how to lean on him and just wear him out because that weight advantage is just too much after
it is
over the course of a whole thing.
That's but what I relied on because I had no technique. Yeah,
he was. Oh, that's right. I forgot you wrestled. He was. This kid was talking smack to him, and this kid was like a state champion in one of the lesser states in wrestling. But he was really, really cocky. It was like the first day of camp. So my brother was like, I bet you I can pin you 3 times in 1 minute. So they got up and I don't know how he did it to this day.
Wrestlers love to do that too.
You know how hard it is to pin somebody and get them back up on their feet and then pin them again?
You're physically having to pick them up and do it again.
20 seconds each. Yeah. Like Dan was tired afterwards, but he pinned this kid 3 times in 1 minute. So 20 seconds per pin. And I don't think this kid, he was actually a pretty good wrestler, but it was a college wrestler versus some sophomore in high school. So, the other big story that I wanted to get your opinion on before we get to Kanye and Kim Kardashian getting divorced is Fernando Tatis, this kid from the Padres. He's 22 years old. He signed the third richest contract ever. It's $340 million over 14 years. He's 22 years old, but when he was 18 and he was a low-level prospect from the Dominican Republic, he signed a deal with this company, Big League Advance, where they advanced him some money, but then they took a sizable portion of his big league salary. Whenever he made it to the big leagues, they were going to get potentially close to, at this point, it looks like somewhere around 8%. So it would be about $30 million that he might be on the hook to big league advance at this point. What's your gut reaction off of that?
I mean, the gut reaction is that it's exploitative.
Yeah.
I mean, it has to be, right? I don't know how else you can look at it. I mean, I don't, it's the same. It reminds me of like, what are like the payday loan, like lender spots that are totally like, that's like what it reminds me of.
I'm what's just this, like, what's that jingle where they're riding on the bus? What is that one?
Pay me now. Something. Yeah, isn't that, it's something like, you know,
it's going to hit me at 9:30 PM yeah, right, tonight. And yeah, I'll be singing it when I wake up in the morning.
Yeah. I can't wait for that.
JR Wentworth, JG Wentworth.
Yes. Yes.
JG Wentworth. Yeah.
877 cash now. Is that what, yeah, do we get paid for this? Are we going to get paid for this? We get
no,
this,
because right? We're about to criticize them. So is it taking advantage? Is it taking advantage of somebody, well, especially some of these kids from the Dominican Republic or Latin
let's
American
be, Let's be clear. It's objectively taking advantage. That is not up for debate.
All right. Well,
it's like the scale of how much it's exploiting him.
In a lot of these instances, what they're saying, what the critics would say is, like, you're taking some of these kids from really impoverished Latin American countries whose families might be in extreme poverty, and you're saying, yeah, call JG Wentworth, take this money now, and all you'll do is, now this is where it's different than a JG Wentworth or whatever. I'm sure JG Wentworth is on the up and up, right? I don't want to get sued here. So what a lot of those payday loans are, they've got really high interest rates and you have to pay them back or your credit rating will suffer. These aren't loans. These are advances. And if a guy never makes the major leagues, he gets to keep that money. So that's where it gets balanced out a little bit. It's not like if Tatis had never made it to the majors, people are estimating he probably got a $2 million advance. He never would have had to pay that money back. So big league advance is taking a risk up front. And they said this is the first big time prospect that they've cashed in.
I would agree. I would agree. And especially at that age, right? He's still like relatively unknown, I think, probably at that age. I mean, you don't know that he's going to hit that level of success.
Right. They've got algorithms. Just like future NFL owner.
But he's probably over time. I mean, he's almost guaranteed to do reasonably well, but it's the percentage, right? I mean, what's the normal contract? It's got to be less than 3% for sure.
Like an agent?
A normal fee, right? Yeah. And so you're looking at like close to triple whatever like the standard fee would be, that's pretty exploitative. Maybe not. You don't think so? You're representing the Fat Cats.
I don't know about Fat Cats. The founder and CEO, Michael Schweimer, is a UVA grad who pitched in 47 games for the Philadelphia Phillies in 2011 and 2012. They've invested, according to him, $150 million in 350 players so far, and many of them have never played in the major leagues at all. So there's some risk on their part. Now, this is the big one. This is where it turned it around with me, at least in this one instance.
Yeah, that's how you got to look at it. Right?
Schweimer said he traveled to the Dominican Republic to discuss the arrangement with him and Tatis's father, who played in the majors from 1997 through 2010. So this isn't some babe in the woods or anything.
Right.
Like, this was Tatis is not shying away from it. There was one former player that actually sued the company and ended up dropping it and apologized to them for it, which I'm guessing was court ordered or at least part of the arrangement. Tatis says, look, it was an investment to get better. And I used that money to invest in myself. And so now they're going to, that this big league advance is going to get $30 million. If he can be comfortable with that now, because he's still making, how much was the total for? He's still making $310 million before taxes.
Well, and it's not as much as you think it is. You know, it's spread over 14 years, Seth. So
that's true. Time value of money and whatnot.
Yeah. $340 million. And then, you think about inflation.
Put that in a money market fund, Drew, which right now is making what, like 0.1% or so?
Yeah. Look at Vanguard, guys. Yeah, totally.
So, speaking of extreme wealth, I feel like this is a theme to this episode has been extreme wealth, because we started with one billionaire, Jeff Bezos. Now let's get around to Kim and Kanye, who are breaking up. And the thing that freaked me out when I was reading about Kim and Kanye getting divorced, because I guess this isn't even a secret. People have known about this for a while, and this is just now becoming public, just because of there's been so much trauma. I check in on Kim and Kanye about once every 2 years. This is the thing. They're both billionaires. They're both independently billionaires. Has this ever happened before? Have two independent billionaires ever gotten together and maybe become billionaires as they were together?
Well, is Kanye is a billionaire? Is
Kanye, he, a billionaire? He Forbes magazine, the Forbes or Fortune, whichever one lists the Forbes 400 or the Fortune 500. One of those magazines.
I feel like it's Forbes does the Forbes one.
Kanye complained to that magazine because he wasn't listed at a certain level. So he complained to the magazine. The magazine said only two people have ever done that. Only one person had before. It was Donald Trump.
I was about to say those are two birds of a feather with similar narcissistic tendencies.
I think a lot of billionaires would rather not be on the list.
No, of course not. You don't know. The real ones never want the spotlight. You don't want that kind of heat on you. Come on now.
Great. So I was hoarding this all to myself, and now there's going to be pressure for philanthropy.
Yeah, it's like every old set. Like, the smart guys never have to tell you how smart they are.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, come on now. Yeah. But I mean, it's, you know, if those two, if they can't make it work, God.
This is the thing about Kanye. I feel like Kanye has done a service to some NFL players, because this song, the Gold Digger song, I want to say came out around 2002 or so. I just have distinct memories of driving around Kirby Drive in Houston, thinking about it, actually thinking about the song, but I don't know. And that lyric, that one line, win the Super Bowl and drive off in a Hyundai, I feel like that was a cautionary tale for a lot of young NFL players or athletes in general. And not to watch out for women necessarily, but like, hey, that's a pretty strong visual, winning the Super Bowl, but then driving off in a Hyundai. And this is before Hyundai had their luxury LeBron James version and everything. Back then, it meant something to drive a Hyundai.
Yeah. Yeah, I. Where are we going with this? You think that it's people are ignoring the cautionary tale? I guess
we got to side with Kanye.
What do you want me to do with this? You want me to take Kanye's side? You're making it hard. I can't do it. That was the one positive thing. I mean, watching him just completely self-immolate the last year.
I feel bad for Kim. Which, and I honestly, every now and then I watch that show because my wife likes the show. So every now and then I'll watch it. And over time, I've kind of gained a grudging respect for Kim Kardashian, regardless of how she initially came to. She's a savvy business person. Like, she handles her business. Yes, she came to prominence and through the performing arts. But she's just.
You're making me defend Kanye and
No. I'm not blaming Kim for the. I'm not blaming Kim. It's Kanye. Look, Kanye's gone haywire. I mean, like,
yes, I agree. I'm glad you can see the light on that.
Here's a list of Kanye's transgressions. A shortened and minimalized list. One, he ran for president. I thought it was a promotion stunt at first, but he ran for president. He spoke. The most recent one, I guess, the tipping point was he spoke publicly about the discussions and I guess arguments that he and Kim had when she was pregnant with their first child about wanting to abort their first child.
Oh, wow.
Which is a nice thing for your child to read about at the tender age. At some point North is going to read that. And it wasn't something that Kim wanted out there. It wasn't something they discussed beforhand. I would imagine before you discuss the potential abortion of one of your now adolescent children, consult with your wife.
What you know is happening too is there was a moment where they went to like couples counseling, and he, just knowing who he is, would not let that go. He was defending that aggressively to the therapist. He was just owning it. Like, well, I felt like it was best to be honest about what happened.
Honesty is the best policy.
Yeah. I gotta be true to who I am.
He claimed he was broke that time, which I don't think he was, because he ascended back to billionaire status pretty quick. Calling slavery a choice was probably
bold.
not all that popular in the not all that popular in the African American community. Well, not all that popular just in the household in general. You know, that's that brings a whole level of scrutiny onto the family, you know, that you don't necessarily need.
We don't need this kind of heat right now, Kanye.
I guess he also claimed that she slept with Meek Mill, which
that bothered him.
Well, I don't know. If it's a false allegation, no.
I married you, I thought you were
No. That she cheated on as the virgin. He's claiming cheated. She was cheating on him with Meek Mill. Oh. Yeah, this would have been recently, like after he got out of prison, not like before he was in prison. So I think he's claiming that she cheated on him with Meek Mill. And frankly, from what I know of Kim Kardashian and the highly produced, highly edited reality TV show that I've watched ever, I don't think she'd ever cheat on him with Meek Mill.
Specifically with Meek Mill.
Yeah, or just in general. I don't know. Honestly, she looks too busy and tired all the time.
You're a fan.
I'm not a huge fan. I don't. I'm a fan of. I think she's a little bit like, what's her name? Pamela Anderson. Yeah, like when you look at pictures of them when they were young and pure and before they had everything changed, it's like freakish how perfect they were, like in their natural state. And then they go and accentuate everything. And I feel like they just start making themselves look like every other woman that's had a bunch of work done. Yes. Like you can't even appreciate their beauty necessarily because they've started to morph into what all these various women in Hollywood look like. Who that's are exactly also right. trying like crazy to look like Kim Kardashian and back in the day, Pamela Anderson.
Yeah, they slowly, there's a weird apex where those two lines meet. Right. You know where someone far less naturally attractive makes themselves look fake. And then someone who naturally is slowly transitions into the weird, you know, augmented version of themselves.
And there's a very, very obvious. What's the name I'm looking for? Oh, Jim Rome. There's a very obvious Jim Rome.
I didn't see that coming.
I know. It's not as obvious as you might think.
I did not see that.
There's
coming.
A very obvious Jim Rome analogy here.
Okay,
and
got
it's
it.
This. It's this. Jim Rome was like the first superstar sports radio guy, really.
Right.
There's a guys and you know, there was Mike Francesa and those guys in New York, but those guys were regionalized, where Jim Rome was nationwide.
And not
so
as hot.
Yeah. What happened over time was you had all these Jim Rome imitators. So everybody starts imitating Jim Rome, and it gets to the point where Jim Rome just sounds like
everyone else.
A caricature of himself, right? Yeah. Like he just sounds like every other guy. And some of the guys that are doing Jim Rome impressions are also younger and hipper, and they sound actually better doing Jim Rome than Jim Rome
right.
does.
So You're
Jim
right.
Rome sounds old, or he just sounds played, or he sounds cliche, even though he was the pioneer. So sometimes with people like Kim Kardashian, everybody starts imitating the way they look, and then all of a sudden, Kim Kardashian just looks like every other girl trying to look like Kim Kardashian.
God, and then Jim Rome out of desperation has to film a sex video.
Yes, and that's why Jim Rome's got big ass butt implants. You watch him walking
exactly,
around radio.
That's what happened. Yeah, like Jim settle Rome. Down, Jim. We get it.
Jim Rome, 5'2" with a 5'6" ass. He's very short. So
got it.
Last transgression of Kanye was his weird fixation with Wyoming. I don't know why he's obsessed with Wyoming. He loves it out
Is
there.
Is he? He's obsessed with Wyoming.
I could see getting obsessed with Wyoming, actually. I think he probably goes out and spends time with the quiet out there. I don't know. He's a weird dude. I feel bad for Kanye. He's tortured, man.
Well, it's trying to envision just like what does an afternoon look like with him? Like if it's just Seth and Kanye, like what? How are you even connecting? There is no ability to connect. There's no parallel for you two
to connect
with Kanye, just hanging out like on a one-on-one personal level. I don't know how you.
I don't know. I think he might be. I think what happens, and this is what happened with like his 400 years of 400 years of slavery was a choice. That comment. I think sometimes he just starts riffing, and because that's one of the things that makes him a really good rapper. But when you're trying to do that and talk about serious topics, perhaps, and you're just riffing and just letting whatever flows flow out of you, you end up saying some pretty screwy things. So I bet he's got his erratic moments, but I would bet 90% of the time he's pretty calm. It's just that 10% of the time where he's either riffing or he's getting emotional about something. He's probably, you know, he's a little imbalanced.
When he's like, he's a performer, so he's feeding off the energy of, you know, what's around him too. But I mean, do we think, like, what are the odds that it just ends really badly? Like that it just ends in like a fiery wreck? Like, or do you think the marriage kind of was the thing keeping him, or do you think that he reins it back in?
I think he reins it back in. I think Kim keeps an eye on him and a watchful eye over him and helps keep him out of trouble, because he is, after all, the father of their children. So she has a vested interest in trying to kind of keep him within the guide rails. Yeah, well, and sure. I also look with these guys too, with performers and celebrities like that. I mean, you just assume on some level, right? It isn't fair to Kanye, but I just assume that with huge celebrities, there's some level of infidelity going on that maybe they've been living with this for a while. And like Larry King was on his ninth wife when he died. Why did Larry King keep getting married and then keep getting divorced? I'm guessing there was some level of infidelity, right?
Is that a fair assumption? Yeah. I mean, plus like the sexual energy that guy's trying to harness, like how can you not just constantly cheat on every wife?
His physique leads me to believe that
he seems like he might be made of paper. It's like, I'm kind of like, how's he not dead?
I think he might have frozen him too. Yeah, he died. He died like a week ago. Yeah, have some respect. But he had, I think he was on his ninth wife when he died. And
did he really die a week ago?
Yeah, a week or two ago. Yeah.
Oh wow, COVID.
Yes.
Was it really
COVID and being like 95 years old? Yeah, I don't think.
I guess at that point you don't even really say COVID. You're just like, I mean, something was going to happen.
Yeah, it was
stiff breeze.
I feel incredibly disrespectful all of a sudden. So we should probably wrap it up. Now that I am the child at the camp.
I took us down to the.
Yeah, 3 weeks ago I was at a broadcaster's camp and I was talking smack to Larry King, just like that kid talks smack to Cam Newton. You're a free agent. Your ass. There was some weak ass trash talk by that kid too.
Oh no, it was bad. Yeah, it was.
Hey, everybody! If you've made it through this last 10 minutes where everything really degenerated, you definitely got to subscribe. Okay. Well, the statistics tell me that 80% of the people stick around for like the complete nonsense at the end, and you people are in the club. So go ahead and subscribe if you haven't already, and leave a five-star review and follow Drew on Twitter. He tweets once. He tweets once every two years.
Yeah, two or three years. I'm a good follow though. I'm a good follow.
Most of your tweets are complaints to customer service of, was it AT&T?
User base.
Guys, I'm supposed to be watching Infinity Train with my child. Thanks for hanging out, Drew. Goodbye. I gotta go. I'm gonna get in trouble.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, O'Reilly! Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.